You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. Old Movie BS is back together again.
Hello there, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I'm Eric D. Snyder. Over there, that's Jeff Bear.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jeff Bear. That's Eric D. Snyder. This is Movie BS with, wait for it, Bear and Snyder.
That's exactly what I said, only you made it take longer. All you did was make that take longer. You're like the Beauty and the Beast remake of podcast intros.
Thank you. I like that compliment.
You get more money than you're worth. Welcome to the show. We don't have an iTunes review to read for you. Usually we start every show with an iTunes review.
That's right. And Eric breaks out the old-time radio voice and reads your reviews. And it'd be really nice if you could have one for next week. It'd be really nice, guys.
We had a streak there for a while, but today, no streak. So we'll just get right on with the show and review some movies, should we?
Yes, we should. Dog cats.
Dog cat agrees.
One out of one dog cats agree.
Look, since dog cat brought it up, I want to ask our listeners, listeners with cats, is this a thing with your cat where after they use the litter box, sometimes they kind of freak out?
We were almost just going to start talking.
I know. It's not, as interesting as, you know, like 4-year-old children.
Oh, tell me about, oh, I got a story for you after you're done.
I'm talking now about 14-year-old cats. I think that's the thing that cats do, and dog cat does that. He'll use a litter box and then be very freaked out. I don't know if it's because, like, every time he poops, it's still a surprise. That's my best guess.
Like, when you say freaked out, what do you mean?
He gets very energetic. He'll run around and scamper, and he'll meow sort of randomly, and he's just
Is he getting away from it?
No, it's just sort of just a general full of energy post-poop.
Maybe he's proud.
Workout.
Maybe that's how your cat shows pride.
Oh, maybe. Maybe that's it. Maybe he's proud.
Look what I just did.
Yeah. Sometimes he should be proud. Sometimes he makes poops that are the size of a human poop. it's something else.
Yeah, it's something else.
All right. So.
The 4-year-old.
Nope. Sorry, I have to say that. No time. Save that for next week.
He's going to talk about Empire Strikes Back.
We can do one or the other. Okay, that's right. He watched Empire Strikes Back. All right, tell us.
It was awesome. He was like super giddy through most of it, and we watched it at night. It ended up being a little past his bedtime. The big twist, it was...
Now let's pause here for the listeners, because as I understand it, the entire reason you had a child was so that you could raise him in an environment... where you controlled how much information he got about Star Wars so that you could experiment and see how the reveal of Luke, I am your father, would blow the mind of someone who had no idea, who had not already heard that somewhere.
No.
That's not why you had a child?
That is not why I had a child.
Lisa tells a different story, but go ahead.
But, no. What I wanted was, I wanted him to be able to go in fresh.
No, I'm totally on board with that. I totally agree with that. That's great.
And I was not, like, this wasn't, it was okay if he didn't fully get it. It was okay if it wasn't the price of reaction. It was all those stuff. I just wanted the opportunity to exist for him.
Yeah.
That was it. And it worked. It didn't work in, like, that, like, jaw dropped, oh, my gosh, what just happened. But... it was one of those, like, you know, I was like, do you understand what just happened? And he just kind of looked at me confused. And I was like, I think we need to watch that part again, Dylan. So I like hopped back. We watched it again. And he looked at me confused again. And I was like, do you understand what Darth Vader's saying? And he's saying that he is Luke's dad. He's like, but Luke, no. Darth Vader killed Luke's dad, because I had kind of been coaching him to make sure he at least knew, like, remember what Obi-Wan said. Remember what Obi-Wan said.
That's fake news. That's what the liberal media kept telling him.
And so then the cutest part was, once it dawned on him, when Princess Leia and Lando and Chewbacca and C-3PO and R2-D2 rescue Luke, he says, I don't think they know that like Darth Vader is Luke's father. And I was like, yeah, no, I don't think they know yet either, Dylan. And that's been great. And then like only a few movies that he's done, he's full out binged Empire. And he's seen it now 3 times in 4 days.
Oh my gosh.
And just like every time he's telling me like, look at this part. He's building snow speeders out of Duplo, like little Lego, like the big fat. And he's like, everything is like the Death Star right now.
Sure.
Screaming kill a lot, but I feel like that's going to fade probably.
Probably not. This is going to backfire on you when he wants to watch Attack of the Clones 3 times a day.
See, here's a no, because I can be out of the room. I can tell him, okay, but you have to go up to the guest room.
Not in my house.
Yeah, that's right. No, I was almost so excited. My wife worked overnight last night, and it was just kind of like, do I want him to watch Phantom Menace now? Because the planet, we're going 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6.
Right.
And like, I'm kind of excited about Phantom Menace, which is the power of children. That there, my friend. That is your reason to have a child.
Yep, the children love Phantom Menace. I was thinking about this. I wonder how much of a concept a 4.5-year-old has of someone being surprised to learn that someone is their dad. Because everyone he knows, they either don't have a dad or their dad is there. They're just the idea of not having known who your dad was. I wonder if someone that age even comprehends that, you know?
And I mean, and he fully, right. And it's enough to where explaining has done it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Because he was, oh my gosh, there was times where like with the snow monster, I can't even remember the name of the thing at the very beginning. Wampa, maybe?
Something like that.
Anyway. Something like that. Like he was like bouncing on the couch going like, oh no, dad. Oh no. What if he kills Luke? What if he kills Luke? So like he was like fully absorbed in the movie for like a long time, very active about it. And it's just, you know, it is a longer movie. And
that's cute.
But yeah, it was good stuff. And I finally was able to get a definitive top 5 movies out of him, which if you have a 4.5-year-old, you realize that's a very difficult task, whether he believes it or not or anything else like that. Right. Do you want to hear him really quick? And then we'll talk about movies. I swear we will.
Sure. It couldn't possibly matter.
Empire Strikes Back.
All right.
The Lego movie called The Lego Movie. He makes sure to say that every single day. He's like, the Lego movie that is called The Lego Movie. Star Wars, Mary Poppins, and then...
Oh, Mary Poppins. That's a good choice.
And then The Boss Baby is number 5 right now.
Well, it's one of only 2 movies he's seen in a theater.
I know, but how I kept trying to tell him he should say the Batman Lego movie.
I will punch you in the face. I draw the line. If you want to make him come up with top 5 lists, fine. You cannot make him say which movies are on the list. It's bad enough you force him to make a list.
I was just curious if it was possible. All right.
If it was possible for him to name the first 5 movies he could think of?
No. We went through all 52 movies.
Did you?
Jeez. And I was like, what about this one? What about this one?
Oh, man. What a nightmare having you for a father must be. That's all I can think. I'm surprised he didn't make the same point that Woody did on Cheers. How could Darth Vader be Luke Skywalker's father? They have different last names.
Oh, Woody.
Yeah. Now, time for movies. This one is called T2, Trainspotting.
T2, Trainspotting. Why is it called T2? I don't know.
No reason. There's no reason that I can determine. No. It's based on... there was actually a sequel to Trainspotting the novel. That sequel novel was not called T2. It was called Porno. And from what I gather, this movie is only loosely based on it. For one thing, the book takes place 10 years later, but due to circumstances, the movie has to take place 20 years later. Due to the circumstance of everyone being 20 years older.
Right.
Which actually works better, I think, because this movie is all about... I like that more time has passed. because they're in their mid-40s now, like they're middle-aged.
Right.
They're at the point in their in your life where maybe you're going to start being more introspective, or you're either going to or you you know cemented in not being introspective, kind of whoever
and maybe
whatever,
just more destructive or
whatever kind of person you are, you've become that person by your mid-40s. 10 years ago, you were still kind of maybe changing, and so I know, this is a good spot to come in.
It was also nice to see the TriStar logo in the beginning of the film.
Yeah, which, the old TriStar logo.
Yeah, we don't get to see that much anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's something.
It reminds me of the Belko experiment, which is bad. Starts with the old Orion logo.
Oh,
from the
man.
80s. Yeah.
Wow.
But the Belko experiment is bad. Don't see it just to see the Orion logo. You can see that logo online if you want to.
See Belko experiment in the theater.
Do not know you either. So no, T2. T2 train spotting. Picks up 20 years later.
It still starts with Ewan McGregor running. That hasn't changed. It's all the same.
He's on a he's on a treadmill now. And we find that Mark Renton, he's drug free, but still has some health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then Spud, he's the really dopey, the really I don't like to use the word ugly, but I feel like he's sort of professionally ugly. His face, he has a good face for radio.
Ewan Bremner?
Bremner, yeah. And he's still on the skag, but is very despondent over it.
He's not a quitter.
No, but he is despondent about it. He is sad about being on the skag.
Because we find out he actually has the girlfriend is now the ex-wife?
I don't think they ever said, it's his longtime partner. Okay. Yeah, but they have a son, yeah.
They have a son. He's trying to figure out if he should just check out or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's his initial beginning.
And Sick Boy, that's Johnny Lee Miller.
Also known as Simon.
He goes by Simon now because...
That's right,
because
he's mature.
Yeah, he's not just some junkie now.
He's a blackmailer.
He's now a cocaine addict.
Yes.
He's moved up from heroin to cocaine.
Which it's classier.
It's classier. I'm pretty sure it's more expensive. Cocaine got to be pricier than heroin, right?
Oh, I have no clue.
It must be because heroin, you got like street junkies.
Did you see me wink?
Yeah, I saw that. Cocaine is like Wall Street. Like, people with money do cocaine. You don't see, like, street bums doing cocaine, you know?
Yeah, but I think the price of cocaine fluctuates. Like, I think there's an actual, like, market or whatever to where
probably.
It's like, wow, cocaine's cheap now.
Well, I don't know whatever it is. Yeah, he's making a living as a blackmailer now. Yes. He's got a Bulgarian girlfriend named Veronica. And
that's with a K. So
sure.
Now you understand.
That's how you know it's Veronica. Bulgarian. Right. And then also you got Frank Begbie, good old Robert Carlyle. He is in prison where he belongs.
Yep. So that's the end of that.
Nah, he gets out.
And, what?
Wants to resume his old life of crime.
And now he wants to inspire his son to follow in the kind of family business.
He's got a teenage son, yeah.
There's a really good moment there when he gets into the house after, like, you know, and his boy is, he desires college. And, he's like, no, what?
College?
That's a joke, right? Come on. Come do crimes with me.
I liked that at the beginning of the movie, it started out that when Frank Begbie was talking, he got subtitles, which I felt like was an answer to what people have been asking Danny Boyle for the last 21 years, and that it didn't last. It was just a gimmick for a couple of scenes.
Yeah, it was that, and Spud also got subtitles.
Yeah, just a little bit, and then no more.
The way that they did the subtitles was I realized it was kind of like an omen of what's to come, which is, hey, you know how Danny Boyle used to have a different style, and he used that to make Trainspotting, and he's evolved now into something else, which could be described as over-stylized. This movie, to me, the main issue I had with it is everything is raw about Trainspotting. You're kind of stuck there with those guys. You feel it. You don't feel necessarily like you're, you know, watching a movie. And this one is camera movement, wacky stuff, random shot here, random shot there, subtitles that kind of flow on the screen. All of this that kind of removes yourself. It's like Danny Boyle is really arrogant about what would be enjoyable to watch while watching these guys do their thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't see it as arrogant. I mean, that's any more than any filmmaker is saying, this is what I think will be good to watch. But it definitely has more artifice to it than the other movie did. There's more technique going on. Sometimes for no reason. A couple of times it works to good effect. There's one good moment with someone's shadow, the shadow of someone who is not there.
Okay, yes.
That is very, very effective use of that kind of thing. But then a lot of it is just goofy stuff, like the subtitles moving around the screen and blending into the background and stuff.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
And this is going to be a yes, one of those definitive things. If you can't answer right away, then I'm right.
Okay.
But I'll word it as a question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can you think of a sequel that has used more footage of the original in that sequel than this?
Superman 2.
Because
this is just snippets. This is just snippets here and there. Superman 2 had like long
snippets. Yeah. I think it has a lot of snippets.
It's a fair amount of snippets, yeah.
All right, Superman 2. Okay, thank you very much. Mm. Your work here is done. You can go. I'll do the rest of the podcast.
You recall that when we last saw these four gentlemen, that Mark had stolen money from Simon and from Begbie.
I like that you call him Mark. I always call him Renton.
I don't know why I fell into that habit. Well, in this movie, they call him Mark most of the time.
Yeah.
So that's why it's in my head.
That is weird, because now I am calling Simon,
Sick boy. He'd stolen money, and so, there's going to be trouble now that he comes back. And there is some trouble, but he and Simon, Sick Boy, wind up working together again in the old days. Because Simon's goal now, he needs money, not for heroin, but for cocaine, but also because he wants to open a brothel. That's his and Veronica's big dream, to open up a brothel.
And this is another thing that just kind of like, oh, okay, you're going this way. Got it. He declares to Veronica he's going to figure out a way to get even with Renton.
Right. I'm going to pretend to be his friend, and I'm going to get him back. Yeah.
And it just kind of is like, oh, okay. So and it makes perfect sense that these guys wouldn't care for Renton and what he did to them years ago.
Right.
That makes sense. I don't think anybody would necessarily be clamoring to see a Trainspotting sequel that doesn't have camaraderie.
Right. They need to be getting along. They need to be pals, not fighting with each other.
It is an unfortunate thing. I mean, I understand the logic. I do. And luckily we have the genuine feeling between Renton and Spud still. That is, you know, a connection.
And there's some of it with Renton and Sick Boy. They do have a phase there where they're working together. There's a great scene where they go and get some money from some Protestants.
But because of that opening,
right.
The declaration by Simon, you're just kind of like, okay, that's going to linger. Got it.
Well, and that's kind of what this one is. This whole thing is much sadder than the first movie, more melancholy, because like the first one was about these screwed up kids, these tragicomic junkies, reckless young people. And now this one is about reflecting, and like all the snippets of flashbacks they show.
Yeah.
And there's some there's at least two songs from the first film soundtrack that have instrumental versions appear in this one.
I think it's I think I just didn't like pick up on some of them.
So there's lots of references, lots of nods to the first film, but it's not wallowing in nostalgia. It's because this movie is about these characters reflecting on what happened before. Spud starts writing stories about the old days, memoirs.
Yeah, he's the closest we have to somebody that is truly that you're rooting for.
Yeah.
I would say he's the closest we have. And the weird thing with Renton is you don't really get a sense of exactly who he is. Like, I know, well, immediately he's kind of misleading about who he is, and then we find out a little bit more, and it's just kind of like, all right.
He's sort of the generic, cleaned up now, I want to help my friends who are still on drugs, want to help them get out of it, that new optimistic, new lease on life kind of thing.
You know, we rewatched this just a little bit ago. It felt like it would have almost been nicer to not rewatch it. And because then that nostalgia, we would have felt it a little bit more.
Well, I'm glad we did.
Maybe?
Because I wouldn't have remembered. I'd only seen the first one
we rewatched it.
And I was glad to have it fresh in my memory to notice the elements that come back in this one. And because some of them are subtle. Some of them, I think you would not realize it was a reference to the first movie unless the first one was fresh in your memory.
Yeah.
There was a few of those.
That could be. Yeah.
Overall, I like this. Like I said, it's sadder than the first one, and it's – yes.
By the way, Begbie is just a full-out villain.
He's just a psycho. He's a psycho,
Besides that hint of family that they show that does have some payoffs.
Which they do a good job. They do a good job with. They do a job making even the psycho make him into a real person, which he never really felt like in the first one.
Yeah. But now he's just full-out villain, wants revenge. That is his goal. And revenge on Renton, specifically.
For stealing 4,000 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, 4,000 pounds. That's 2 tons. over there saying, "Oh, this is sadder, and it's not as entertaining as the first one, just on the shallow basis of pure entertainment value." But I think this is a richer character study, and I think it makes them seem more like real people.
Because
in the first one they were fun to watch, and it was sort of it was affecting to see them. But I didn't this shows. I guess maybe this is just a personal thing, but there's a disconnect for me seeing dumb idiots in their early 20s doing dumb things. Like, I can watch that, and that's fun, and I can feel the emotion of it, but I don't relate to it like I do to someone in their 40s looking back and saying, because these are adults now. Like, these are grown-ups having to deal with adult feelings, and I just relate to that better. I don't know.
Yeah, and whereas I'm coming in on it just reeked of authenticity, the first one.
Sure.
Whereas this one doesn't.
Yeah, this one is
like just feels like a movie.
Does not feel authentic. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
but the character. Yeah. I guess that's. I would agree with that. The movie itself feels not too authentic, but the characters do feel authentic, and I like that they all four are humanized and made real.
Spud writing things down, like, you know, thinking about writing stuff down, the stories, the past, all of this. That is a cliche. The movie uses it pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah,
like it's pretty. And again, because you do find yourself hoping for the best with Spud compared to everybody else.
And it's also a cliche that I'm surprised it works because Spud is the dumb one. Like Spud's an idiot. He can't write. Come on.
Well, I mean, and at least he has very poor penmanship.
He has very poor penmanship.
At least
he
has that. But also there is what do we want to say? The gross factor of that first one and the dark moments of that first one.
They don't have that so much in this one.
Not so much. I mean, there's a little vomit in a bag. Who doesn't vomit in a bag?
Yeah, really just the one, but that one brief gross moment is kind of the only one of those.
It is pretty much it. But
so if you're looking for more poop, like last time, sorry.
You're out of luck.
Yeah.
You're out of luck.
And
Veronica in general, even though she was almost supposed to be a muse for some of them at a time, it was okay.
And mostly her presence just complicates things because she's,
Simon's
girlfriend, and then, you know, these other guys come along, so there's going to be trouble there.
And I would have I kept feeling like I would have rather had the guys try to figure out stuff without her.
Yeah, sure.
Or like have more conversations without her or more time without her. That's kind of how I felt. I am barely above a 5 here. I'm giving it a 6 out of 10.
Oh, I'm giving it a B.
All right.
I liked it more than you.
I'm closer to a 5.
Well, now that T2 Trainspotting opened in a couple of cities last week, and now this weekend it goes everywhere.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. And this week there's 3 new wide releases. And all 3 studios involved apparently are very proud of them. Because pretty much everywhere, they all screened Wednesday night all across the country, which is basically the last minute because they opened Thursday night, you know. So basically the last possible minute. And in some cities didn't have one or more of them at all. And they're all at the same time. So these are all movies where the studios were like, just all right, show them on the Wednesday. I don't care. We don't care if it's, it conflicts with other things. Just we don't care if people see it. Just do it. Just do it. So we did not see Power Rangers or Chips. But we did
see. Hang on.
What?
Chips actually opens up this week?
Yeah.
I thought it opened up next week.
No,
I thought there wasn't a screening next week.
No,
wow.
No, there wasn't. No, Portland didn't get the Chips. Portland got Power Rangers or Life, and other cities got like Chips and Power Rangers, but not Life, or Life and Chips, but not Power Rangers.
Very odd.
And a few lucky cities got all 3. In a few lucky cities, the critics had to miss 2 movies and choose the one instead of only have to skip 1. So the one that we did see is Life, because that was the one that was screening closer to our houses.
Life.
And Life. I don't like movies, as you know, that have titles that could be the title of any movie.
So that's it? That's the review?
I mean, it just means that off the bat, this movie has got an uphill battle. Got one strike against it right out of the gate.
Oof.
Being called life.
How many more strikes are you willing to give it?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the sport of baseball.
Go on.
But three strikes and you're out.
Okay.
This is, the title says it all. It's about life. No, it's in space, on the space station.
You know, like in Jurassic Park where they say life finds a way?
Mm-hmm. Kind of like that. Yeah. It's more like in Alien. You know, like in Alien, in Ridley Scott's Alien, when there's people on a spaceship and there's an alien trying to kill them?
Yes, I remember that.
And this is that same setup, but I appreciate that it doesn't just follow the same beats. I mean, there's going to be some similarities because that scenario is going to have some similarities. But it's not just an Alien ripoff, and I appreciate that.
The very beginning is pretty cool because it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Like Ryan Reynolds is, I believe he's the main pilot on the right.
The main on the ship. Astronaut or whatever. I don't know.
Main astronaut. Pilot.
I don't know what the have the division of labor. I never know what these people's jobs are on these. They always have jobs. I never know what the difference is.
Okay. Well, everybody has a very specific job. Like
right.
Jake Gyllenhaal's
it's just
a doctor.
Not specific to me.
Okay. Anyway, like he's trying to do something really cool. He's got to go out of the space station and deal with it. And we're like, we're mainly like the crew in the ship watching him from afar.
Right.
And right away, you're just kind of like, okay, maybe you're going to tease us a little bit. Maybe you're going to talk about it and not just show everything. And I think that's a great start for this movie. And flat out, we have the best of the best. I'm always a fan when we're like, these are the best people for the job. Like, we've got this person who always does this and is just great. And like, on and on and on. And that's what we have here. So, good start. Good start.
And the beginning is cool. We get some long tracking shots inside the ship. And some sometimes we're upside down because it's all, you know, no gravity. And I like the feel of being around in the ship. It's strange, though, that prologue doesn't matter. Like, the whole thing is that what happens is they're on this the International Space Station waiting for a capsule to come back from Mars with some samples of Mars dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is that the capsule's been damaged in transit, and now Ryan Reynolds has to go outside and help it arrive or whatever.
I'm just saying life finds a way.
But then it does, and it's fine. Like, that was an unnecessary complication right off the bat, it seems to me like. But anyway, the point is they got this Mars dirt, and in the Mars dirt there's a little single-cell organism. And then it grows to be more cells than just a single cell.
That's right. And the way that they kind of showcase this is pretty cool, too, I think, where they involve Earth and their reaction to it. And, like, they have kids involved.
Right, because this is the first discovery of life off of Earth. Yeah. So, they've got school kids asking questions of the astronauts. It's very cute, yeah.
It's very cute, and they end up, like, one class gets to name it. They name the thing Calvin. Mm-hmm. So then this little cute little thing that's just adorable.
I mean, it doesn't have a face or anything. It's just, you know, a clump of cells, and it's as it grows.
Clump of cells, but it's like dances like Groot for a second, like baby Groot for just a second. And
sort of a translucent gelatinous
loogie,
yeah. And then it kind of gets bigger, looks more like a five legged octopus, like a fivetopus.
Yeah, we just jump at it. Like, we're just like, okay, slow and steady, slow and steady, slow and steady. Like, they're occasionally doing day one, day two. And then it's like, boom, day 25, something bad happened. It's like, mm-hmm. okay. Get a little focus back. And once again, they talk about firewalls and the importance of a firewall. And it's like, hey, safety first, everybody. And I like that because, once again, it's like, all right, I have smart people that I'm watching, not dumb people dealing with an alien.
This is standard protocol. If we're going to find an alien life, we're going to keep it quarantined in a room on the spaceship until we know what its deal is.
Yes.
And, well, not to spoil anything.
It shows us its deal. It
shows us its deal.
Deal is pretty dang impressive.
And it proves to be unconfinable to the lab.
There is a sequence that, oh my goodness, like when this thing shows what it's capable of, and then they try to stop it initially and just realize they can't, I was just hooked. It was gripping, totally
gripping.
There's
some really good, very, very tense scenes. Yeah, with that, I think the film has an effective musical score. It's one of those,
yep.
And that works really well in the tense moments. And yeah, mm-hmm. I think it plays us like a fiddle. And so yeah, it's this crew. Jake Gyllenhaal is also on here. Mm-hmm. He's the doctor, and then Rebecca Ferguson is the captain, the boss lady, I suppose.
The boss lady is Olga, Kat, played by a name that you can say. Olga something
Olga
or other.
Olga Diovchinaya.
Yes.
Well, that's the Russian one.
She was the captain.
Was she?
Yes.
We've just edited out a very important thing where we refreshed one another's memories on who everybody was.
We saw this minutes ago, literally.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And everything boiled down to, but so-and-so, you know, was still alive at the end. So that person was, we've got it all sorted out.
Yep.
Yes, anyway, variety of characters. There's a Japanese guy. There's a Russian lady. There was,
yeah, and then the guy who really is affectionate initially towards Calvin, played by
Arion Bakari.
There we go.
Not familiar with his actor.
And everybody is given a quiet moment, a little something, one extra scene of dialogue, or a moment of like connecting with a wife back home on Earth, or something.
Yeah.
To where you do feel a little bit.
A little bit, and the thing
but mainly you're just you're nervous and scared because the atmosphere that's created, as opposed to no, not that one,
not so and so,
right?
And that's kind of my only real issue with the movie is that it has all these people in this situation. The situation is scary and good, and they do it effectively, but the characters are not particularly interesting, and I kept. About halfway through, it had a bit of a lull in the energy.
Yes.
And I was thinking, okay, what is this lacking to make this like a great epic thing? And I have a few ideas. I think that maybe it might be too simple. Ultimately, the plot mm-hmm. is just kind of maybe it needed another twist or clever diversion or something.
Agreed.
And it doesn't have any particularly great performances or characters, as you said. And so it was missing something, and then it had a great ending, which made up for it to a great extent for me.
The one I honestly, my biggest thing was, I kept trying to figure this out. The Calvin is always CGI, 100% CGI,
yeah,
from
right.
my perspective. If it could have been practical effects. If they would have taken the time, if they would have done that, I feel like that would have been more significant. And the turnoff of that is if you do a little CGI and a little practical effects, like then for me in my eye, I'm always just like, oh, okay, that one's, oh, okay, that, you know, right. I'm flipping back and forth there. That's not enjoyable. I would have liked that a little bit more because the atmosphere is great, but sometimes I'm just like, when an attack or anything is happening,
yeah.
I'm more or less just focusing on anything that is real in the shot, like the human compared to the beast.
I never felt like it looked fake. I mean, obviously it was CGI, no, but I felt like it had the weight and the strength that it was supposed to have.
Well, and I wonder if they did this because like zero gravity all the time, and that was the effectiveness of it too. Like
right.
they could get away with the weightlessness of CGI character, as it were.
This kind of creature, this sort of slimy, almost jellyfish-like thing, would be very hard to do in practical effects and make it look.
Maybe
look real.
Maybe they can do anything. Maybe I just
they know. Can with CGI.
I know. I'm just. I know it's a little thing. It's a little thing. Also, I feel like they almost stuck the ending. But I will say this, driving home from the theater, mm-hmm. I couldn't find my phone and I actually had to pull off on the side of the road and search for my phone. And it was this movie because I had just seen this movie and I was digging my hands everywhere and everything. I just was flat out creeped out. And it's like, oh, well there you go. That's what you need. You want your movie to make you feel a little icky afterwards, if that's what it's going for. And it does for me.
Yeah, I think the ending is great. I think it did stick the ending. And that to me made up for a lot of the other so-so things. Overall, though, it's a nice solid B.
Oh, I'm an 8 out of 10.
Hmm.
I was hoping to be BS approved.
Well, that's life. Ah! You see what I did there?
Yes, everybody did.
And then another movie that I have to review, Jeff didn't see this one.
That's not true.
You saw how much of it?
I think 30 minutes, and I was surprised, because I thought it was only like 15 or 20 minutes.
At Sundance, and then you walked out of it. And this is, you didn't walk out because it was bad, though, right? Didn't you have to go somewhere else or something?
I walked out because it wasn't good enough. No, like, Mr. Dan Meck and I just decided we needed to start partying.
Oh, it was the party night. Oh, good.
It was the party night.
Right. Well, yeah, this is the last word. It's got Shirley MacLaine. And
National treasure.
National treasure. And she plays a sort of a cranky old bitch who's
curmudgeon.
An old curmudgeon who decides pretty much randomly that her greatest goal in life is to have a glowing obituary written of her when she dies, which is going to be hard to do because everybody hates her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a retired businesswoman, and she was a ball breaker and ruthless and reckless and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she does what anybody would do if they want to make the greatest obituary ever.
Her life and starts being a great person so that people will say nice things. No, obviously not. What she does, of course, is she goes to the local paper in this California town. And this local paper has a full-time obituary writer, which is how you know it's not based on a true story.
That's
and
right.
She, Harriet, that's the old lady's name. She goes and she gets Amanda Seyfried and basically makes her follow her around and prepare her obituary in advance. She's allowed to do this because she used to buy a lot of ads in the paper years ago. So the editor
and maybe,
feels
and
obligated.
Maybe who knows, right? Maybe who knows she'll give them more money or something like that. Like that's the hope. I guess.
I don't. No. That's. She's retired. She's done. She's not in business
I remember
anymore.
Exactly when I left. It's when she went to go pick out a black boy or girl. I was just done.
Oh, yeah. She also decides that she should go do some good deeds. And looks for a disadvantaged young black girl to mentor. And this is amazing because this is obviously on the part of the character a undisguised cynicism. And the movie does not treat it with as much scorn as it should. Because, like, this is not a satire of like, some – or, like, a dark comedy about a mean old lady who decides to try to buy a good obituary. It tries – this wants to be a genuinely effective, you know, albeit quirky, but it wants to be a real comedy about real people. And it's ridiculous. And so the other one, Anne, is the Amanda Seyfried character. She has to follow her around like she's writing her biography, not a 500-word obituary. And then also Harriet decides randomly that her greatest life's ambition is to become a radio DJ.
What?
Yeah. Decides, even though she stopped buying popular music 40 years ago and has no experience being a radio DJ, she wants to be one. And so the manager at the local indie station puts her on the air. Because she goes in and asks. She just because here's the thing,
that's what you have to do.
Because she well also and because she's so good at saying what song she would play and then what song she would play after that song. Like, because I know that look you're giving me, you're like, oh, just play whatever songs. No, it's an art, man. It is an art to think of, well, I'm going to play this song and then I'll follow it up with this song. And people are like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of playing that song after that song.
And Harriet's so good at this that the guy's like, all right, you're on the air.
Yeah, puts her on the air. And after her first shift, she gets a round of applause from the staff, including the DJ whose job she took.
I don't like this. Hurry up.
So yeah,
I'm getting upset.
This is
a
movie. It's a movie about people who with no understanding of newspapers or radio stations or human relationships. Directed by a guy named Mark Pellington, who made a bad movie called I Melt With You at Sundance several years ago. That's the joke movie we make fun of Dan McAfee because he was the only one who liked it. I Melt With You.
All right.
He gave it like a B-, and that was the best anybody gave it. So we give him a hard time to this day. It's just not a moment of authentic human interaction or insight. Just these one-dimensional characters in phony situations, and it's very predictable and wrapped up with neat, dumb platitudes. And it's a shame because Shirley MacLaine is very feisty. She's a fun, feisty presence to watch. But it's all just so insincere and dumb, and I give it a D+, the last word, the end.
Yeesh. Thrilled with my choice.
Mm-hmm. You made the right choice.
And for the record, I rarely walk out of movies, so. Well, it's different. That's all I wanted to say about that.
It's different at film festivals. It's different rules there.
Yeah.
You got so many options. Speaking of options, there's DVDs out.
Yes, there is.
And you guys could rent or buy them if you wanted to. Some lucky fan from last week has won a copy of Fences.
Yes, that's already happened. It hasn't happened yet.
Hear this, us. The winner will have been notified. And thanks to our new agents, we had a few new agents, a few new people became agents so they would be eligible for the giveaways.
Which is nice. And we look forward to more people becoming agents for helping us for giveaways. For whatever reason, you can and should be an agent.
You become an agent simply by contributing $1 per show through Patreon. Go to moviebs.com. You'll see how to do it.
Keep in mind, we don't want like $1.50. We don't want $2.25.
No.
We just want $1.
$1 a show is plenty.
It's what we want.
Now, this week we have no giveaways. But here are some DVDs that you could go buy if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have giveaways again soon, we promise. You got Assassin's Creed, which is just a bad, dopey video game movie. You liked it.
I really liked it. It's one of the better video game adaptations. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah, more power to you on that. And then Live by Night, the Ben Affleck mediocre gangster movie.
I remember how beautiful it was. And I watched it on my TV at home.
That's a Redbox movie. That's a dollar Redbox movie, Live by Night.
Yeah, it'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
It will.
That's worth a dollar. Assassin's Creed is not worth a dollar.
Yeah, more like $1.25. No, give them a little extra on that
If someone presents Assassin's Creed to you for free and you have nothing else to do and you dislike cinema, then yes, watch it. Miss Sloane, Jessica Chastain, that's a good one.
So good. Like this is a movie that was under the radar.
Mm-hmm. Very good as a Washington political lobbyist. And mm-hmm. it's funny and kind of dark and kind of serious, and it's really good performance by Jessica Chastain.
And the twists and the turns?
Twists
like
it has
both. Mm-hmm. It has both.
That's worth even more than Redbox. That's worth like whatever it costs on iTunes to rent something.
Yes, $4.
Is that all it is? Yeah. For new releases?
I think so, for the most part.
I thought for new releases it was like $6.99.
I don't think so. I mean, I know that all prices vary on iTunes.
Sure.
You never know what you're going to get until you get it.
Anyway, you should watch it. Mm-hmm. And then Sing, that cartoon Sing.
Now, you saw this in the theater.
No,
I did not.
I didn't see this in the theater.
Did you see it?
No, I've never seen it. It looks like a nightmare to me. It's animals singing karaoke, right?
So it made so much money.
And people seem delighted by it.
They seem delighted by it. And I think here's my thing. Historically, like making a movie like Ice Age or Madagascar is not enough to entertain me. Like you got to come up with something more. Animals talking is just not enough.
Sure, sure.
And
animals singing.
I watched one season of American Idol in my life and kind of sort of had a good time with it.
Sure.
This is just like I was so bored. I watched it with the kid. He halfway through it. This is the power of cinema in general, though. Okay. Halfway through it, he was like, I think I'm done watching this movie. I don't want to watch this movie anymore. That's very rare. And I was impressed. And I was like, okay, I'm going to have it on. And you can play with, you know, go ahead and play with your Legos. Mm-hmm. And it was so great because then he kept gravitating toward the couch and just like staring at the TV. And then he would say things like, Daddy, listen, you have to turn this movie off because otherwise I will watch this movie and I don't want to watch this movie. I want to go play with Legos. I'm like, all right, go ahead. Go play with Legos. It'll be over soon. Don't worry about it. And he's like, no, you don't understand. If you leave it on, I will watch it. And it was really – it was like a battle of it wasn't wits, whatever the opposite of wits is that he has at this stage.
He found it that compelling even though he didn't like it?
He did not. No, it was just moving pictures. Like, this is the thing with kids. It's like, oh,
right, yeah, yeah.
That's something to look at. Now I'm stuck looking at it.
That was happening to him. That's great that halfway through he was like, I don't want to watch this. But
don't
you feel disappointed that he didn't do that during Cars or Trolls?
Sing is annoying. It's just flat out annoying.
It looked annoying.
And it's all just pops. It's all songs you already know, except for one Porcupine that wants to do an original song. And it's like, who cares?
It's just animals singing songs off the radio, right?
And the lead is a koala bear that is like trying to somewhat scam people, and you know he's kind of sort of trying to scam people. Mm. And it's like, well, that's not adorable, even though you're a koala bear. And Seth MacFarlane plays a mouse with an attitude.
Oh, Seth MacFarlane.
Ugh. It's not a good movie.
I never thought it was. Thank you for confirming that.
You're welcome.
So those are some DVDs. Some movies you could watch on DVD. And so that brings us to the end of this episode of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. What did we learn today?
We learned that...
life is pretty good.
Well, yeah. Oh,
I was going in backwards order, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Backwards order. Of course. I don't know what I was thinking.
I don't. No, I was wrong to go backwards. But life was good. We liked life.
We did. I think it's really
life.
Good.
We liked the movie life, not like life.
Not real life.
And then T2 Trainspotting, I think it's good, but it's not great.
I would rather it not exist.
Well, that ship has sailed, my friend. There's no way around it. No, this movie definitely exists.
Well, yeah, but not for everybody yet. Like, there's still time.
I mean, it's kind of out there. It's kind of like the alien in life. Once it's out there, what are you going to do? You can find us on Twitter at MovieBS, and I'm on there at Eric D. Snyder.
And I'm on there at Bayer Jeff.
And I got stuff over at Crooked Scoreboard, website that I edit and kind of write for. I wrote a thing this week about Porky's turning 35.
Oh.
If Porky's were a person, it would be old enough to be disgusted by Porky's.
I wrote a thing over there. It'll be happening soon.
Oh, yeah,
a little comparison of Trainspotting versus T2 Trainspotting. Spoiler alert, the original wins.
We also had a good piece that somebody wrote over there about the first Trainspotting soundtrack, going song by song and talking about how it fits into the movie and how it plays against discussing how it's such a well-used soundtrack in that first one. The sequel obviously had no chance of having a soundtrack as good, and it seemed like it didn't really try.
Right. No, right. Like, there was a couple of songs where, like, oh, that's not a bad song, but, like, that's it. And the only reason I was thinking about it is because of how good the original soundtrack is.
Sure.
It was like I was on point. Like, okay, let me see what you're going to do with the soundtrack this time around.
I knew there was no chance. I suspect Danny Boyle knew, too. There's no chance. He just didn't
even try. Considering the very end of T2 Trainspotting, yes, he knew there was no chance.
There's not going to surpass the first one. Let's just, stick with that.
Yeah.
So that is the show. Thanks for listening. Until next week, for Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bayer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
Good day.